Hi, this is Glenn Mulcahy, your host for Love What You Play podcast and online events. I'm super excited to have a chat, a recurring chat with my good friend, Matt Young. And I could list off a whole bunch of different hats that he wears, but like me, he is an advocate to change the youth sports landscape and make it better for kids. We're just trying to make a difference. So Matt, I'm really excited you were able to fit this in. I know you got a pretty crazy schedule coming up. So let's get at it.
You bet. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks a lot for having me, and thanks a lot for doing what you're doing.
So we actually had a chat. The first time I ran this summit, it was about a year and a half ago, last summer. And it was kind of following, and I'm kind of thinking back in time how long we've known each other. Going back to 2016, we both spoke at the same conference, the Delta Physical Literacy Summit, which was in Delta.
Right.
And it was about a month after we had originally connected. And it's now been 3 years since the personal sport record was kind of introduced to the mass. I'm not sure if that was the first time, but it was the first time I came across it. Mm-hmm. So 3 years since that came to fruition. Where are you at with it now versus 3 years ago?
Yeah, sadly, slow progress. The personal sport record, the idea was that stakeholder connectivity to be really transparent with the athlete's development metrics. And, when we started introducing it, we naively thought, why wouldn't everybody want to be on board with this? Well, then we learned what the sport system is and isn't. And to stay positive is there's a ton of opportunity for that level of transparency. We seem to be okay with putting people on their side and not bringing them together, when I think that's exactly the opposite to what we need to do. So yes, we've had a good uptake from the one-off clubs, working with a great soccer club in the Valley. We've working with a baseball club, working with volleyball clubs. We've connected with a lot of the national and provincial sport organizations to determine what they want. We've put all that stuff in the sport record. We've had conversations globally, from Norway to Liechtenstein to Switzerland. You name it, we've been out there talking to them about it. And it's new. It's front end. So we're on the front end of the wave. So the adoption I would like to see happen faster should happen faster. On the plus side, the Ringette Alberta has really taken to it, and they've connected with Ringette BC and Ringette Ontario for what I've seen is the first kind of cross collaboration across provincial sport organizations. They love the tool so far. They've got all their players entered into it, and we'll hope to see it grow from there. Biggest home run we're waiting on is still the PGA. So through Dr. Stephen Norris, was introduced to the PGA. Senior Director of Player Development, went through the sport record. They're very keen on white labeling it. We've been in discussions for a year and a half. You can imagine what pushing change through the golf industry is like. And we're looking really forward to helping them develop and supporting them in their development of their player and athlete development pathways. So the PGA is really the first major group that has said, yes, this is something we need to increase the engagement of the experience. And from that standpoint, we're still in the process, and we've had a lot of meetings. So I'd love to tell you that, every single kid is on it in the hockey world and in the basketball world. And it's one of the only platforms that revolves across sports. But again, it's slow to adapt. And that's just fine with me, because this isn't about a money-making venture as much as it's about adding, a quality experience and that stakeholder connectivity to the different stakeholders of sport.
Yeah, and the sports system, as we both have found out knocking on the doors, it's slow to adapt to change, and a lot of them are monsters in terms of the bureaucracy that they're having to deal with. And also what I've found a lot is the changes in their upper level, like the board members at the smaller associations. You got a president's in board for 2 years, and then next there's another one and another one. They all have all their own different agendas. For people that don't know much about the actual platform, though, maybe touch base on why it's so good, because the baseline testing component and the metrics, I've been a big advocate right since day one when I saw it.
Yeah, thanks, Len. And, athlete development should be the holistic development across the competency, which is the physical skills, speed, strength, endurance, power, speed. It should be the indicator of the technical, tactical competence, dribbling, stick handling, whatever sport that you're in. And that needs to be baseline, and that needs to be kept somewhere. Historically, if we've done it at all, we've done it on using pen and pencil and then on Excel spreadsheet, which, to your point, usually sits on Ron or someone's computer, and then when they leave, it that goes with them. What we thought was, why aren't we giving this development data to the athletes, to the parents, to the coaches, and kind of removing the subjective opinion-based placement, or you're going to play on this line or this power play because X, Y, and Z. Using that data to help inform the decision making and really bring the stakeholders together. So, it's basically, for lack of better words, a LinkedIn for somebody's athletic accomplishments, whether they are a recreational enthusiast, whether they are a high performance inclined, whether they just want to keep track of their stuff. It allows the athlete to do that on that point. Some of the other features in it are, in addition to the competence, which is the physical and technical tactical, we've also, with the help of Dr. Wade Gilbert, really drilled down into the connection, the confidence, and the character as well. So those are things that we don't often talk about. The connection, what social emotional, that what is, are you having fun playing? Are we asking that? Do you understand performance nutrition, relationships with teammates? That's all the social emotional stuff that really we need to start drawing out of sport if we want people to focus on it, because as you and I know, what gets measured becomes what matters. And, the character skills, like the focus, the game sense, the work ethic, all the off the ball, off the puck characteristics, which we're now hearing and seeing from universities, is actually becoming more important than just the technical tactical aspects, because they're looking for good human beings first, quality players second, because you can teach the skills, and that's what all these high paid coaches in these universities and or other get paid to do. They can teach the skills, but you can't teach a lot of that other stuff if it's not introduced early and practiced. Confidence, which is the resilience to self-belief. You and I have talked about this at length. We know the changing landscape of the family dynamic and the school system. There's just a lack of accountability all around. There's a lack of adversity. We're trying to minimize that. So that's not developing resilience. And that's what we're seeing at the high levels, people quitting. You look at the transfer portal in the NCAA, I'm not playing, I'm out of here. So those are some of the things that we're trying to instill and drill down earlier, and using really the sport record is merely a conduit to house that information so that it's accessible by everybody. So that's the main feature. A couple other features, it's got a safety feature, concussion protocol. It's right there, it's digitized. People can use it on their phones. The abuse reporting functionality, third party, someone has a complaint, whether it's verbal, isolation, physical in nature, or sexual in nature. If it's physical or sexual, we know we're going to the police right away, but where do kids want to report that stuff? I don't think it's on a helpline. I don't think a kid is picking up, a 10 to 12 to 15 year old kid is picking up a phone and calling somebody and telling them about it. I think that the digital space is where we need to be with that kind of stuff, and providing them an opportunity to be heard and be, whether it be anonymous or whether it be by name, and then have another third party get into that, because you and I could talk for hours on the gaps in the abuse in our sports system as it relates to abuse. So lots of different things in the sport record, kind of really thinking and making it consumer centric, not about what we wanted to do, but what did the kids want? What did the parents want? What did the coaches need? How can we help bring tools and resources to them that they can use?
Yeah. And then when you kind of nail it on the head with the reporting mechanism for the abuse, you introduced that to the PSR well before all the issues that came to the forefront earlier this year.
Correct.
It was added as a feature last year. Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just makes sense. I don't see, I just don't see, I don't understand what's so complicated about creating a system that reports. I'm thinking it's the liability of knowing, and again, what we do, we're not the adjudicators of punishment or consequences. We are simply the conduit with which now other organizations know. So there's no more, we didn't know. Well, actually, yes, you did, because they reported it to us. We reported it to you. And we also encouraged them to report it to the police if it was physical or sexual in nature, per the Safe Sport Act, both in Canada and the United States.
Yeah, which makes it makes it accountable versus the sliding under the rug, which came to light with many organizations, with many coaches earlier in the year. And since that point, it's kind of stalled. I mean, there was a great momentum soon after, but then, okay, what do we do now? So great tool and highly, highly recommended. I've been trying to get so many different organizations on it for a long time, but it's cool that we're now starting to see the early adopters kind of go, yeah, we get it. And we know why the benefits. What about the school sports sector? Is that something you've tapped into at all, whether it be in Canada, US, or other countries, or no?
Yeah, you know, the education systems are really hard nut to crack. And I understand it in terms of the demands that are placed on teachers, particularly in the physical education departments, where there are no more specialist physical educators. It's more of a generalist vocation now. It's really tough. I'll just say it's really tough to get anything into the education sector. Number one, because so many people try to do it and make the system better, so they're a little bit overwhelmed and overloaded. But number two, I just don't really think the appetite is there. I don't think the appetite is there for quality physical education experiences en masse. Yeah, you're going to have the odd pockets and regions and teachers that are really good at what they do, but what we're seeing and hearing is that the appetite just isn't there, and that's sad because that's really where it all starts. I mean, you look at kind of the factors that are decreasing participation in sport. You've got the lack of free play, which happens at home, and if there's no free play, not only are you not developing the confidence, in the connection and making those really important, but you're also not making those important synapses for decision-making and in your brain. So it has more of a cognitive benefit than just the physical benefit. So lack of free play. Number two, lack of fundamental movement skills. Run, jump, kick, catch, throw, two-handed strike. You know, if you're not learning those through free play and now you're going to your education system and you're not learning those through school, which you used to, then you're really at a disadvantage, because if you don't have the fundamental movement skills, chances are you're not going to be proficient at the fundamental sport skills when it comes time to do those. So those are two big things. Marginalization of physical education, huge, global issue. Everywhere we talk, whether it's Switzerland, whether it's Liechtenstein, whether it's Italy, same thing. School has turned into the test prep to get into the university. That's becoming more important than the whole body-mind connection. So phys ed's being marginalized and we're not learning the things that we need to learn, where kids are spending the second and most amount of time of their lives. We're not getting a lot of instruction and quality instruction around fundamental movement skills or free play in those areas. So that's tough. Those are three. We've got technology. Don't need to get into that. I mean, that's basically meeting kids where they are. They got the fun. They got the friends. They got the fair play. They got the friendly competition. They got everything they want, and they don't have to move or do any work for it. So that's a battle that a lot of parents and a lot of groups are going to have to contend with. The cost, it's been brought up, the elitism for sport, travel teams. You know, we're not necessarily getting our best players represented. We're getting the players that can afford it. None better illustrated than the United States loss to Canada in the recent soccer match. I mean, there it is right there. Non-deniable. As they say, soccer as a global sport is a reflection of the culture of a country. I think I saw two African-American players on the U.S. team and very few Hispanics. And that is interesting and both telling, because I can pretty much assure you that you and I could go down to the United States and put together a soccer club and a team that would beat the current soccer club and team, and it wouldn't be with all the kids and players that just showed up and could afford to play at the camps and at these combines. So it's a systematic problem. The cost, it's rearing its head. It's very obvious. We're going to have a really difficult time changing that, because so many people are making so much money. That to come in with a evangelistic or what's the word I'm looking for, a moral challenge to making money, we've just seen how that's really tough. So that's another thing, and then you've got the early sports specialization. So Those are kind of the six factors that really are contributing to Duke Eastern participation. Your question was around the schools and physical education. I think they're a conduit. Absolutely. There's going to be schools that do it well. There's going to be schools that don't do it well. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is all the private schools, the Catholic schools, the schools outside of the public school system doing it well and prioritizing quality daily physical education.
It's because it kind of going back to the old school model that it's a well-rounded person, sound mind, sound body. You think back like when we grew up, we had phys ed, we had music, we had art, drama, languages. It wasn't just academics. And that's been the big shift. As my kids were going through the pipeline, I couldn't believe when I said, well, what do you mean your phys ed block got canceled? Oh, no, we need to do this. We need to do that. And by the time they got to grade 10, 11, it was literally non-existent. But the thing that really concerns me is the fact there's no phys ed specialists at the elementary level, which is the most important age group that we should have them at. So how do we fix that?
Yeah, it's critical. And you look at countries like Iceland and Finland who, 400,000, are in the World Cup. Well, Canada with 35 million isn't, and the United States with 350 million isn't in a global sport. You know, how do they do it well? And to your point, what they do is they have their best coaches at the entry levels of sport, their best coaches. In North America, we reserve the best coaches for the highest level of sport and kind of let the lower levels take care of themselves. And really, that's what we're seeing is that we're seeing the ramifications of that void and getting in there and getting on it. And to be frank, you and I have had these conversations a lot. Well, it's great putting together all these platforms. I think that's my next play is actually getting in somewhere and making that change and being that example, just starting with one community at a time, showing it, scaling it, but I think we're either coaching the coaches or coaching people on how to be better, or we're actually doing it, modeling that example ourselves. And I think one of those two things needs to happen from a high level, capable coach or team or group to the grassroots level to get them started. The problem is that getting into these places is really challenging because that requires admission that we're not doing things well. There's an opportunity to be better, that the kids should be better, that there's going to be accountability, that we're going to start holding people accountable for these results. And as soon as that A word comes out, everyone kind of gives the Heisman or the pushback. That's where it comes from.
Yeah, it's not just the accountable. It's the other one that you love, the activation. Mm-hmm. Actually making it happen, mm-hmm. which although there's lots of bests of interest, and I've worked with a lot of organizations now over the years, it's kind of that one-off, like, come in, let's do the talk, rah, 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 and then 2-3 weeks later, they're back to where they started. So unless they make that full commitment to a full cultural change, it's not going to happen.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, hey, listen, I've said it a million times. If there's when we go to other countries and speak, and they say, well, Canada, you guys must be doing it well. You've got the long-term athlete development pathway there. And I say, hey, listen, if there was a med, on the advocacy side, we do not deliver and activate as well as we could.
And it doesn't matter which sport it is. In only the last, 5-10 years, most of the NSOs have started rolling out their version. And when I say their version, everybody's branding it differently. It's either LTAD, ADM, LTPD. Like, why they don't have one, we've talked about this. It should be just LTAD right across the board. So I know that's a lot of the work you've been doing. Is that what you're trying to impress with the organization, especially out of the country, that they have one terminology for it and one platform?
Yeah, Glenn, I'm really glad you brought that point up because, we look at the four tenets of quality sport management. Number one is organizational alignment. Are the organizations aligned both vertically and horizontally? If there's no alignment there from NSO to PSO to LSO in Canada, that's where you get the problem. And everyone's pointing at everyone else. It's your fault. It's this, it's that. So those are a lot of conversations that we're having right now. What is the responsibility? I don't think anyone's ever mapped that out. From a business perspective, I look at the NSO as the, what is their role? Okay. So number one, their role is marketing. Because the NSO is accountable to the COC, own the podium, and the International Olympic Federation. They got to put on great events, and they got to put the best foot forward because that's where the money comes from. Nobody wants to support non-winning groups, non-winning teams. That's the way it is. I don't care if it's right or wrong. It's just the way it is. So that's their number one priority. Number two priority, though, is they are the franchisor. So they are the franchisor in this whole business of sport, and they should be providing a quality, easy to follow, consistent operations manual for the PSO, who in my take is the general manager. The PSOs are the general managers of the NSOs. Their job is to, number one, provide the athletes and mentorship and to filter up to the NSO level. Their job is to make sure their LSOs are implementing the operations manual. They're the general managers in a business terminology. And then the local sport organizations or community sport organizations, they need to follow the course. And there's got to be accountability, like you said. There's got to be repercussions for not being accountable, like you said. If you want to do your own thing, fine. You are not going to be recognized, and that's not what we're looking for kids at the next level. So let's follow the system, and we'll give you the support. We'll provide you support for the operations manual. And in Canada, we got some barriers. Number one, there's not as big of an economic driver attached to sport as there is in the United States. There's just not. So where's that money coming from to support the PSO to be everywhere that they need to be and doing what they need to do? Now, if you ask me, I would cut out a whole bunch of different tiers, consolidate everything, and find the money to do that. But we just don't seem to have that appetite, or for some reason we haven't got there yet. So back to your point, yes, organizational alignment. In my humble opinion, all NSOs should have one vision, as many as possible, as long as possible, in the best environment possible. It's been said by everyone. That vision can be embraced by everybody. And if we had that vision and we consistently asked and put up every single thing we did or we didn't do against that vision, I think a lot further, a lot faster. So number one, organizational alignment. Number two, discipline project management. Like we just talked about, how did the PSOs get funded, or how do they go in and hold people accountable to do the different things that they're doing? We operate in Canada like we're 10 different countries. We can't get along. We operate like every sport is different. When you boil down to a sport, all sports to concepts, they're not that different. Create space, get into space, use your skills to take advantage of that space, close, get the goal, score. It's not complicated. And if we look at the percentage of time we invest on, the technical, tactical aspects and the physical aspects, it's almost like 100% of our time. We invest very little time on the connection, the character, and competence, despite the fact that 90% of kids that play sports in high school will not play in university, and 95% of kids that play sports in university will not play semi-professional or professional. We continue to use the elite model over everybody, and we're seeing the repercussions of that. So who's got the discipline project management to do the things that you're talking about? Holding people accountable, not just going in and doing the talk speech, but following up and saying, hey, listen, you're not doing what we said we're doing, because we've got stakeholder connectivity, the third one. We've got feedback from the parents, the kids, the coaches. We got full transparency over what's going on, how people are feeling. You've been evaluated by the kids anonymously. We can see that. So now we can drive that to help you be a better coach. And the last one is integrated operating environment. So if you don't have those tenets in any business or sport, you're not going to be successful. It's not rocket science. This didn't come from Matt's head. I didn't pull it out of the back of my trunk selling tiger milk. It is standard business procedure. If we operated a real business the way we operate our sport business, we would be out of business. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing sports go out of business, so to speak, because there's no value.
Well, that, and you just have to look at a perfect example of the attrition rates. I mean, you got 70% of kids pulling out by 13 high school, and official attrition was like off the charts, 50% in their first year, 30% on average every year thereafter. 3 years, you've lost your entire employee base in that you're paid. Mm-hmm. If a CEO of an organization or any in the private sector had those kind of attrition rates, they wouldn't be around for very long.
Right? Gonzo. Yeah, Gonzo. And, we often say, oh, well, they're volunteers, so we can't hold them accountable. We can't ask this of them. They're just volunteering their time. That's bullshit. And you really, it really is bullshit. And we got to tell ourselves it's bullshit. So I just said it three times. And if you volunteer to be a volunteer firefighter, you're not rolling up to fire and go, I'm not going in. Like, by nature of the position you're volunteering for, there should be a lot of things that you need to do to meet a bare minimum. We shouldn't be desperate. One of the things that, on that note, and what I see happening a lot is, and I've been at lots of directors meetings, hey, who wants to be on the board? Okay, you're on the board. Okay, well, wait a second. What skill set do they have? What position do they need? You know, determine that first and go out and get the people in the community. Because the people that are in the community, it's the busy people. Tell a busy person to do something, they'll get it done. You know, they don't have any agendas. So we did that one year with baseball. We had a guy that was at the ballpark, and he took care of that place like it was his own backyard. So we said, hey, we need you on the board this year because our mission statement is increasing engagement. We want to raise money, get a scoreboard, put proper fencing in, have not a dilapidated thing, bring in pitching machines. And he was thrilled to be asked. It was fantastic. We went to a woman who was fantastic in our community at fundraising. We need you to be the director of sponsorship. So we didn't just sit there at the end of an AGM and ask. We knew what the right people. You put the right people in the right roles and good things happen. Again, not rocket science, but we don't do it.
Well, it all comes down to the whole recruitment aspect instead of just put the hand up. Going after the right people versus saying, right. Hey, you know, anybody want to do this?
Got pulse.
And sadly, 80% of in the not-for-profits and the volunteer sector of the work is done by 20% of the people.
Correct.
And so how do we get more people to put their hand up?
Well, they have to have a good experience. More people will put their hand up if they believe in the leadership and they have a good experience. If you don't believe in the leadership, you're not putting your hand up. And if you don't believe in what's going on, you're not putting your hand up. And that's why, let's go back to the vision, as many as possible, as long as possible, in the best environment possible. That's something people can get behind. If a local organization, we want to be the best hockey organization in the province. Okay, well, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? And how does that benefit my son or daughter or me? Like, and what are you doing? So I think that, you know, I'm a big proponent of the vision, mission, values, terms of reference, guiding principles, goals and objectives. Those are business fundamentals. And whether you're a not-for-profit or for-profit, whether you're a volunteer board, whether you're an organization, anytime you're an organization, those fundamentals need to be in place. They need to be updated and reviewed. You can't just walk into a club and look at the wall and see this big vision. That's there. It's got to be repeatable. It's got to be out in the market. You got to take that and you got to go drive business. That's what you'd have to do in business. Sport for too long has waited for people to come to it. And when it was the only gig in town, i.e. there was no technology or video games, or there was no social media, or where there was nothing else to really capture people's time because there's only two channels on the television. Okay, well, you'd have the upper hand in sport because all of those things that we mentioned, we're getting practice, free play, fundamental movement skills, quality daily physical education, no technology. You know, cost was super inexpensive because it wasn't all these travel teams. So if you look at the whole genesis of what's gone well and what the opportunities are, it's not difficult to see what you need to do. If I was a business, I need to provide a better customer experience. I need to provide more value for my customers if I want to stay in business.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting you say that, because when I was in Alberta 3 years ago, I did talks for Edmonton Lacrosse. The president of Edmonton Lacrosse walked up to me and said, yeah, we want to provide the best customer service experience possible. And I said, you just nailed it on the head. Like, that's where we need to go. We need to treat this as a business, not as an not-for-profit volunteer sector, because you're losing your customers and you're not zeroing in on what they want versus what, you know, you think they want. And a perfect example, and I've shared this a lot, is the whole esports phenomenon that is exploding. And if you look at the video game industry, it's multi, I don't know, it's something like $170 billion in revenue worldwide. And their events that are now hosting, they're selling out in minutes. Why are kids zeroing in on video games to the extent they are? Because they are safe to play. There's nobody telling them what to do. If they fail, they press the reset button. But most importantly, the video game manufacturers create the games that the kids want. And every time they create a version of it, they go and say, what do you want on the next one? U Sports doesn't do that.
Yeah. And you and I both know what kids want because we asked. So what do kids want? They want fun, friends, fair play, friendly competition, and they want to finish the season better than they started, skill-wise. They don't say development because that's not what they know. So fun. How often do we ask kids during the season, hey, are you having fun? How often does the coach ask that or parent ask that? Friends. Are they meeting new friends? Are they able to play with their existing friends in their community? Or are we taking that out because Johnny, who lives beside Jack, or Jenny, who lives beside Jane, is superior, so she goes a whole new, you know, ridiculous. Fair play. No kid signs up to sit on the bench. The kids sign up to get ready. I don't even know why during a regular season there's not even lines. I do know why, because the win is becomes so pervasively important. Friendly competition. Kids do not, we've talked about this before, go to a schoolyard. If one team is beating another team on a self-regulated game, the kids will stop the game and then we'll fix it. They will either go, hey, you got 20 kids versus us five, or they will go, okay, Matt, Jen, and Sarah, you go on that team, Johnny, Abraham, and whoever, you come on our team. They balance it out. They self-select. They like friendly competition. There's nothing to be learned in a lopsided victory and a lopsided defeat. Nothing. And you talk about a shit customer experience. That is a crappy customer experience. I'm sorry. Finishing the season better than they started. Like, how do you know? At the end of the, I used to sit there and watch the exit interviews from the coaches. And one coach said to my kid, he goes, you know, you're super talented. You get all the skills. You're just undersized. So you're probably not going to, you should be here. Good. You're good rep player, but you're just undersized. Who says that? Who says that? Give the kid something that he or she can actually work on and fix. Don't tell them that they're undersized or a late developer or too small. Like, it was the most bizarre thing I've seen. But listen, I really like your point about the customer experience, because let me ask you this in a rhetorical question. In a tight economy with two parents working, who in the hell wants to get in their car in North Vancouver, and leave for a 9:15 game in Chilliwack, BC, where the kids have to be there 70 minutes early? Who wants to be there? Who thinks that is a great experience? And so kids play at 9:15, they're home at 12:30. We were home at 12:30. Kid has to get up at 7 o'clock, go to work, and the coach is scheduled to practice the next day. And we're going to bag skate because we lost the game. Like, I could not think of, if you're trying to create a customer experience, I couldn't think of a worse way of doing that. And if you try to tell me that needs to happen in our sports system, I'm going to tell you you're full of crap, because it doesn't need to happen. Kids can play locally. Games could be at the same time so that kids can schedule other events. This whole, I think in five seasons of my kid's hockey, he played, there was something scheduled six out of seven days for a association that promotes LTAD. No, you don't. You're talking about it. You don't do it though. So if I wasn't a parent with confidence and knowledge, like I'm gleaning through you and the stuff that you're doing and these podcasts and you know, meeting people like you from around the world, I would have just thought, oh, my kid's got to better be there. But because I knew, I said, no, we're not going to this and we're not going to this. And if you don't like it, then we'll just get another team to play on, because that's not what we're here for. He's playing two sports a term because we want a well-rounded athlete. And I know a lot of parents that are like that. And I know a lot of parents that
couldn't agree with you more. My son was actually they're 2 years apart. How old's Steele?
He's 18.
So 2001, 2002.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a hockey parent. So my son's 99. And you know, when you're a hockey parent, when you use those last two numbers, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing, that Chilliwack game. But we also had in our flight, we had Whistler, we had Sunshine Coast, we had Seattle. And those were not just an hour drives. Those were like full day journeys for a game, where the kids may play 20 minutes of hockey but sit for 2 hours or 3 hours, whatever, on the commute to and from, that's not their 60 minutes of activity a day. And that kind of precursors my next question. 60 Minute Club that you co-founded, where have you gained traction with that? And how important it is for the kids to actually get their 60 minutes a day?
Yeah. So you wanted to keep it positive. So let's see how we're going to frame this up. So 60 minutes, free tools to support kids' healthy habits and physical literacy development. Went to pretty much every single, you know, self-funded a tour across the country, met with every minister of health and minister of education who loved it. But, you know, obviously they can't give a blessing for a program, even though it's free. Worked our way through the school system, had really good uptake for the first 5 years. You know, we were in over a million, scaled to over a million households in Canada off the side of our desks. Wasn't even our primary job. You know, didn't want to, you know, build the platform, built the whole engagement strategy. Got it evidence-based from UBC teacher, from, you know, Nike designed to move, you name it, tried to give it to and take it to the organizations the government has tapped as the arm's length government bodies, and really learned that these organizations are not really focused on the activation, not really interested in the activation, more interested in just getting the grant and putting out more information. You know, the whole research, grant, PDF package done, tick, it's gone. Research, like, you know, and really disappointing. I'm not coming across as a disgruntled employee. I'm coming across as somebody who wanted to help kids and built a platform based on what the kids wanted. Because we went to school and we were challenged by the teacher to say, we don't want any of these programs that are using because they're useless. We want a program that actually engages the kids, meets them where they are, which is through a blend of technology, high touch, rewards, all the things that we know are good for overall engagement. And we want to build it out. So long story short, kind of finished our run in Canada. We still deal with the odd school, the Champion, but ended up gifting the charity to one of these organizations who subsequently shelved it. And, you know, now we are, the tools have been used and the videos have been downloaded by over 283 countries from around the world, over a million downloads. We're working with one of the largest top five pro sport organizations to develop a couple of more tool sets, update them, upgrade them, and put some marketing behind them so that they can be further utilized by people. And now we're working with a country in Europe to figure out a 10-year plan where we can activate this in their country, because they see what everyone else sees and that there is an opportunity because there's a deficit here. So really disappointing to go through that experience, in Canada, better for it. You know, anything, when people ask me now, hey, listen, I got this great program and product. What's the best way to deliver it? My answer is direct to consumer. Do not go through any middle people, because these middle people are, number one, afraid to take a risk because their jobs are at risk if it doesn't work or it looks bad on them. And number two, they'll be out of work conceivably if it does work. And, you know, I didn't understand that. I get it from a business perspective. You want to get in a job, you want job security, but my personal thought is if you get into a job like that in one of these not-for-profit organizations, you should be in it for the end result and the consumer. But again, it ties back to money, Glenn, because we don't do a good job funding this, because it's not a priority for us. Clearly, you know, Canadians value our health care a lot more than we value our actual health. That makes it really hard to incentivize people to implement any upstream prevention, because we've got all the downstream covered.
Yeah, the old 99% of the cure is prevention, which is not being incorporated. We're reacting to, like your TED Talk, when you're talking about the obesity challenges that kids face today. And there was a statistic, I don't know if there's truth to it, but the director of Pisces on the island, he did another TED Talk, and he said, and this stat blew my mind, if we keep going at the current rate of, you know, lack of activity that the kids are having, 70% of kids by the year 2040 will be fat or obese. And I was like, wow, right now we're at 33%. When we were growing up, it was around 10% because we were all active, we're running around. So there is this huge issue and the spiraling like type 2 diabetes and what have you. So advocating physical activity is makes sense to me. And communities onboarding that kind of idea, because it's going to help them long term.
Yeah. Hey, listen, couldn't agree more. You know, physical activity as a cure, quality daily physical activity. It's not about the sports. It's not about winning or being the best or doing all that. But quality daily physical activity would solve a lot of the issues that we're seeing that are arising now, from the mental health issues to the obesity epidemic issues to the disease, preventable disease, to the a lot of the things that come with a sedentary lifestyle that we've embraced. So there is zero question about that. We do not need another study to prove that. We do not need another dime invested in that. That is not where the investment should be. It's not where the focus should be. The focus should be who's doing it right, who wants to do it right. And, you know I can speak for you, and I can speak for probably about 52 other people when I say this. We're ready. There's a bunch of people that are ready to roll up our sleeves and make it work. My challenge to you as a community, as a organization, as a school, is to utilize us, utilize these tools, utilize these people that are ready to make it work, have the experience, have the desire, the passion, have the wherewithal to make it work, utilize them and make it work. Like, start something, think global, act local. It's got to start somewhere. We need to see more positive examples of real stuff happening, not BS, fake crap, real stuff. Like, give me the numbers. Here's where we started. Here's where we are now. Here's what the kids are saying. Here's what the parents are saying. Here's what the teachers are saying. Here's the grades. Here's what the doctors are saying in the health. Do the work to get those stats. And that's the discipline project management. So, you know, lots of ways of doing it. I will give an example. So, you know, we created a physical literacy for communities framework. And then we encouraged the government to invest in it. Government invested $1.5 million, but then we parsed it out in $20,000, $25,000 grants to communities. When what we should have done is we should have said, here's $1.5 million. We want one community, and we're going to fund you until you stop doing and stop delivering on the mutually agreed upon milestones that we've created. And as soon as you do that, we're going to go to the second community. But here's what you need to do to be ready and willing and able to do this. You need to do all this work and show us you're ready to do all this work. Instead, what they did was they parsed it out into, $25,000 and $50,000 grants for communities. That doesn't do anything. You take that money and you don't have any discipline project management, nothing changes. And you do a summit, or you invite someone in to, you know, use the tools and resources that an organization has created that are useless to begin with. And you put garbage in, you get garbage out. And that's what's happening. That's off the back of taxpayers' dollars. I know it's happened. I'm very vocal to our government about stop doing that. Mm-hmm. Stop funding the same people to try to do different things. We have our familiarity bias. Innovation's not coming from the not-for-profit sector, where the goal is to keep the doors open and keep getting the grants. That's not where innovation is coming from. Mm-hmm. Innovation is coming from the 23-year-old, the 25-year-old, the people that are operating so far outside the box, the people with business experience. We need to lean on those people. We need to leverage that expertise, and we need to stop trying to push everyone down while we create this little fiefdom. It's really frustrating. It's annoying. And again, who loses? The customers. The customers lose.
It's not just the customers, it's the kids, and the end result is the pipeline is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, because more and more of them are not even getting into the pipeline, let alone staying in the pipeline.
Yeah, absolutely.
So given it, do you have any examples of organizations that you've worked with that are setting the bar, or even if you're not working with them, that are setting the bar for the rest of the world for as an example?
Yeah, not really. I'm not even going to lie to you. Not really. It's the same bureaucracy. It's the same red tape. It's the same. You got to go through so many layers of crap before you actually can do stuff. There's an organization in California, soccer club. One of the guys went in. He took 13 clubs, merged 13 clubs into one. He removed 76 of 84 paid coach jobs. He took 149 boards of directors to 9, and he increased in five years, increased U6 participation 300%, increased U7 to U15 by 40% and went and connected with the school in his community and are now introducing, piloting the soccer program before school soccer program into the school system for all kids, charter kids. It's charter school, so it's not elite. It's not an academy. It's a regular school. And they're piloting it with the notion of coming and doing it for all sports as they come up. So yeah, there are pockets of great examples. And you know what? There are lots of pockets and there's lots of people doing good and great things. Mm-hmm. Just not enough. We don't focus on it. We don't look at the model and use it. We keep trying to, get the same results by doing this. You get different results doing the same thing and it doesn't work.
Which AKA insanity per Einstein, right?
Correct.
So shifting gears, one of the things that you are a driver for was the cost of winning documentary, mm-hmm. Which I had an opportunity to be a bunch of the screenings and share it out with people. How many countries have seen it and what has been the feedback from that documentary since you produced it with Atlee?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. I mean, I can't even count the countries. We get about 150 views a day. And they're coming from all over the world. It's been shown at Olympic education meetings. It's been shown at Olympic education forums. It's all the way to YMCAs and grassroots homes and clubs and different things. So it's got a lot of legs. It is different voices saying similar things. It's more of a solution oriented, and it really brings in all the different stakeholders from the highest sport organization to the elite college, what they're looking for and what they're not looking for, to the athletes, what they're experiencing, to the parents, what they're going through. New Zealand, Australia, Ireland, England, a really good piece just to say, hey, listen, on the specialization front, on the professionalization of sports front, we gotta really revisit that because it's not working.
Yeah, and feedback that I've had when the ones I've ran has been, wow, I never thought of it in that perspective. Wow, it is kind of gone to a winning at all costs model. Mm-hmm. So how do we reverse it? What do we do to bring it back to the kids?
Well, you're not going to beat it by fighting it. So as the saying goes, if you you don't change something by fighting the existing reality, you change something by creating a new reality that makes the existing one obsolete. I'm going to give you the answer. What I'd love to see, and I talked to a guy yesterday who said, listen, and listen to the irony of this. I want to build a new sports club. That's what he says. And I go, okay. And he goes, it's going to be a sports club where we have a season and we're going to have a season of hockey. And we're going to have one practice, one in the gym session that's going to go over all the fundamental movement skills, age and stage appropriate fundamental movement skills. And we're going to have one game and it's going to be at the same time and at the same arena. And we're going to play locally. And we want to do that. And we want to do that and engage another sport and cooperate with another sport to make sure that the kids can play more than one sport. And then we're going to change it up and we're going to have a different season and it's going to be a lot of the same kids invited back to play a different sport. So whether it's lacrosse, whether it's baseball, whether it's any other sport in the spring that kids want to play, whether it's a club or it's in their school. And he asked me for my feedback and I said, yeah, you got to go into the schools. And you got to support the schools and the community that you're in. And you start with the community and bring the seasons and bring back the education in the schools and bring back the free play, the fundamental movement skills, meet kids where they are, teacher mentor, parent mentors, and, put it together, stakeholder connectivity, all the things that we've learned that we've pulled together. That's what we need to do. Isn't that funny that youth sport of any institution is one of the only ones that has regressed the more adults have got involved in it.
You kind of nail it on the head because it's no longer kids playing kids anymore. Mm-hmm. Adults competing with other adults through their kids. Mm-hmm. The bragging rights, NCAA scholarships, oh, my kid's going to play professionally. And it starts as early as 6, 7, 8 years old.
Yep.
And you nailed it. You said earlier, like 95% of kids, once they've got into college, they are in high school. They're not going to play in college, and less of that percentage will go on to play professionally. 0.03% is the actual number when I've calculated it for hockey, soccer, I believe baseball, and I'm still trying to figure out the basketball number because Canada has really started to explode there. But think about that. You've got a better chance of winning the lottery than you do actually playing professional sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's
how do we get parents to understand that the best path is invest in their education, encourage them to play as many sports and other things as possible. Like your son was doing two sports plus other activities. Mine did the same thing. My daughter did the same thing. How do we get parents to understand that's really the true path, that other perspective that they should be going?
Yeah. Well, if I had the answer, you know, I'd be a lot wealthier than I am. But I'll say a couple things to support your points. Statistically speaking, you are better off winning the lottery. It's a net zero game. So by the time you've paid for all your stuff and my kid got the scholarship, well, actually no, because if you would have just taken all the money from all the travel, all the stuff that you pushed them in, they could have had a scholarship. You could have paid for school anyway. So it's a net zero gain. And you talk to kids and talk to the athletes afterwards, they missed out on some of the most important things, which is their friends, having fun, playing with their friends and doing that stuff. And you're hearing from more athletes that are advocating for that, along the road. Lastly, you look at the percentages of what goes into a high performing athlete. Genetic predisposition is a huge percentage. You have no control over that, especially the way sports are going. And listen, if you're born and you're 7'1", you know what? Your doors are open for a lot of sports if you're remotely athletic. So, genetic predisposition goes into it. That's number one. Number two, it's an internal locus of control for the kids. It comes from within them. So those percentages that go on from high school to college and college to professional, they're internally driven. As a matter of fact, the best thing you could do is get out of their way instead of getting into their way. I hesitate to think of how many kids didn't get there because of the parental nonsense and just like packed it in and pressure. So you look at those are two big percentages. As a matter of fact, they probably, equate to more than 70% of that high performance equation. And then you got things like luck, you got things like a good coach, you got things like, the right environment for the last 25%, split those equally. But you'd think by the way we coach and monetize that, you'd think that those last three things were the big factors. They're not. The Sidney Crosbys, the elite athletes, they were driven. They were on that path. They had that vision. Very few of them needed a lot of extra stuff. Now, I'm not saying it's not warranted or benefit, but I'm saying, listen, it plays a far lesser role than you think.
Yeah, it's like that whole concept with the deliberate practice, the book range that you just read. Right. There's a study done by Princeton where they looked at the impact that practice had on the kids reaching a really high level, like an elite level of sport. And they determined it was only 18% because of a lot of the other variables that you identify, the genetics, but some things that you didn't touch on, sleep and recovery, nutrition. Like without those three, you're not growing like you should. You're not getting the proper amount of rest. When a kid's playing a 9:15 PM game and he's coming back at 12 o'clock at night, that's not really conducive in his growing cycle, right?
Yeah.
So it's something they got to really consider in terms of where that perspective is and how they're going to get there.
Absolutely.
And it is coming intrinsically. The drive, like when I've scouted and I've looked at kids and a lot of the major junior guys I've talked to, they look at a kid and they'll be able to say, yeah, he's going to go to major junior and this kid isn't, because one's got the drive and the commitment. The other one might have the skills. He might have all the stuff the parents think he's going to have. He doesn't really want to go there. Yeah. He's just going through the motions.
Yeah, he or she don't. Yeah, you're right.
All right, so wrapping up, deep dive.
Yeah, a deep dive. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for doing what we're doing. I think you've said it a lot in your podcast. Like, let's be solution oriented. We know what the problems are. Let's chip away at it. Think globally, act locally, make small changes to start. Access the people. You've got a great network. We've got a great network. Access those people. Access the expertise. And let's focus on creating an unparalleled customer experience, because that's what it is, a quality sport experience for as many as possible, as long as possible, in the best environment possible.
Now, would that be your definition? Because that's one of my last deep dive questions. Define quality sport experience, because we've talked a lot about it in this chat. Would that be it in a nutshell?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so a couple other deep dive questions. You're a big book guy. I know you're doing the audiobooks and also reading. Any ones recently that you would recommend for stakeholders in the youth sports sector, whether it be a parent or a coach, that they should read, that's a must read?
Yeah, I go back to Wade Gilbert's book, Coaching Better Every Season. It's now broken down into more digestible units. It's great. I thought Range was great. It's a great book for people to get both sides of the perspective. It's not hammering one or the other. It's actually giving both sides of the perspective. So I thought that's a really good book. Those are the two right now. Leadership, John Maxwell, you know, for coaches, prospective coaches and parents, you know, how we led in the past, you know, can be effect, you know, may need a change going forward. So those are the three I'd recommend.
Cool. And what's up for you, the remainder of 2019 going into 20?
Doing a lot of work with provincial sport organizations, helping them find their way, find their identity, message their boards of directors, influence policy change, and understand exactly what we just talked about, which is creating a great sport experience. You know, really excited to continue working with the PGA and seeing what comes with that, and working with some of the countries in Europe, and really, again, wanting to get into it, wanting to get into it.
Yeah, it's cool that there's people that are now, after, you know, pounding the pavement, literally, that we talked about 6 points of contact, that you're now at that 6 point, and you're finally getting the buy-in and saying, yeah, let's start moving the needle in the right direction.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely.
Loved our chat. Always do. Never a bad moment. We could have gone 100% negative, because we've had that. That's why I had a precursor. Let's see if we can keep this more on that, because the half full versus half empty has been tough for me at times too. I mean, remember even seeing you in an email, hey, you know, we got to get off that and we got to shift to the solution.
Yeah. So. Yep. Absolutely. Well, thanks, Glenn. I really appreciate what you're doing, and look forward to connecting in future podcasts.
Perfect. Thank you much.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks for joining us this week. You can find us on Facebook for Love of the Game, Twitter, TLOTG Conference, and forlovethegame.ca. We'll see you next week for an all-new episode.